I am turning 40 this week, and I'm pissed about it, so I've decided to get together with Wes Smith and ask him for some advice about how to survive the second half of my life over the hill and all. So let's get into it. Welcome to Sage Reverie, a podcast where we seek to live well and live wisely. I'm Mike Wilson.
And I'm Wes Smith.
We live in the great state of Wyoming, and each week, from a biblical perspective, we discuss a trending topic and what others are saying about it. If you're using these episodes for your group, there are discussion questions in the description. And for more information about our ministry, visit church307.com. Wes, I'm feeling old.
Sure.
This whole turning 40 thing is, was it hard for you, or is that an age that, like, turning 40, was that an age that was hard for you? I mean, that was like forever ago for you.
Sure. Yeah. Like, no, 40 wasn't too hard. 50 was a little harder.
Oh really?
Yeah. 50 was a little bit.
Is life even worth living?
Life is fantastic at 50.
Okay.
Life is the bomb. Life is better. 40 for me, you know, 40, you often still physically, you can still do 80% of what you could do before, or at least you think you can.
Yeah.
Statistically, you can't, but you can not face reality at 40. At 50, you have to start facing reality. Yeah. So, yeah that was harder.
I feel like for me, turning 40 is more a question of regret. Like, I had all these ideas and dreams about where I was going to be. But yeah, physically, I'm running more on the, I can run longer now than I've ever run before. Yeah. So
many people are more fit at 40 than they were at 30.
Yeah, definitely.
Because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think for me, it's more about goals and ideas and dreams that haven't come true. And
so early midlife crisis kind of scenario.
I am actively fighting off a midlife crisis that's happening right now. So
Not unusual for especially a leader.
Yeah.
Right. At 40, that's but the dreams and hopes we had.
But then at 50, like, can you even have sex after 50? It's like, does that still work?
Great sex.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. You don't have to rush through it. You can enjoy yourself. Great sex. You've figured out things.
That does 50. Make sense. Cause right now, about every other time, one of my sons are pounding on the bedroom door.
Yes.
What are you guys doing?
Yes. At 50, you're still young enough to have fun, but you have freedom. You have typically some financial freedom. You're empty nester. Life can be good.
Okay.
Life can be good, man. Yeah. Hey,
well, maybe I'll look forward to 50 then.
Yeah. You got to stay fit and sexy like I have, but
yeah, obviously.
If you do that, you know, you're pretty good to go. So. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about midlife crisis. I'm guessing there are some people that are watching that have even either experienced them. Yeah. I think statistically it's much more a male thing. Like, guys experience it more, but I don't think that's always true.
No, I think it's externally more visible for guys.
Okay.
I think women go through midlife crisis every bit as much as a man does.
Really? Okay.
And every bit as often as a man does.
Yeah.
But it's more kind of external crash for a guy.
Okay.
Than it is for a woman.
Let's talk a little bit about how we respond to it when it happens. I'll play a video for you of what the world says about midlife crisis.
Can you break down this whole concept of midlife crisis that we say about men and why guys need to, you know, go in with their eyes wide open when they hear that insult?
It tends to afflict guys who are more rule following, who are sacrificial, who have stepped up and done the right thing for most of their lives.
Yeah.
And I think they get to this point where they realize, oh, how much time do I have left? And they think, my whole life I've been doing what other people have told me to do. I've done what I should have done. I've been a good boy. You know, I've gone to school and I did what my teacher said. I've gone to work and I've served my wife and my children dutifully for sometimes 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
And they think, well,
what about me?
What about me?
Yeah.
When do I get to live my life?
Yep.
When do I get to benefit from the good and the value that I'm generating for all these people around me? I want a cut of my own pie too.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a midlife crisis because potentially the last time these guys were allowed to think for themselves, to be selfish, was when they were teenagers. And so that's why I think a lot of male midlife crises look like teenage fantasies. It's because they're kind of out of practice being selfish.
I think that so reflects the motivational speaker idea of you got to focus on yourself and you got to pay attention to yourself and you got to pour into yourself. Mm. And the problem is there's truth in that.
Right.
But then you can take it to the sinful side of be more selfish.
Yeah.
And so balancing out those things, I feel like for me, I feel selfish every morning when I go to the gym because it leaves Darcy to do more getting the kids ready for school. Yeah. And But I feel like I need to go to the gym and I feel like I need to do those things, but I can't get out of balance. Like, how do you balance all that is a very difficult conversation. So, what do you do when in life you've begin to realize, okay, I haven't done all that I wanted to do. I'm not going to be an NBA superstar. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to achieve all my goals. And you, I'm assuming that's what a lot of, at least for me, that's what a lot of people's midlife crisis focus on. How do you react to that? How do you respond to that? Is the response, well, I just need to be more selfish and do more for myself and quit giving to other people? Or what is the response?
Yeah, it'd be the opposite of that. So let me back up just, I think there's two primary reasons for a midlife crisis. One is the stereotypical, what we saw in the video, like it's the Enneagram 3, it's the rule follower, it's the I'm sort of trapped, I'm doing the right thing, and I'm sick of doing the right thing.
And by Enneagram 3, you mean somebody who's really conscious of what other people think of them, how they're performing.
Yeah. It's a first child. Sometimes it's from early adolescence, you've really wanted to please the authorities in your life, and then it transitions to the relationships in your life, mm-hmm. and you live out of that, and you follow and you serve and you do those.
You and I are both Enneagram 3,
relate to that. And then it's also the, and often these go together, it's the driven leader type, mm-hmm. right? And you just, what did I accomplish? And I'm at 40 now and I thought I'd be X and I'm not X and mm-hmm. all that. And so it can lead to a transition. Hey, I've got to focus on myself. I've been pleasing these people all my life or whatever. Of course, Jesus teaches the opposite. The way to life is actually to give, but it's not to give yourself as a, I'm going to try to please the people around me more. Mm-hmm. He says, if you lose your life in me, you'll gain it. And that actually leads to a greater level of sacrifice and a greater level of giving, but it's for a completely different purpose. It's a big, great purpose beyond yourself. And there's a smallness in that that is so empowering. So what happens at 40 or sometime is it's not just, you know, I didn't become an NBA superstar, but, you know, I raised three kids and two of them are like barely out of jail. You know, there's those kinds of things too. There's that and that weight of that, just like it comes on you and you can't avoid all of that weight. Maybe you've been through a divorce or two and the rest. So what do you do in that moment is, you have to transition, you know, life's a transition from being a player to a player coach to a coach to a sage.
Okay, a player.
Player.
A player coach.
Player coach.
A coach to a sage.
To a sage. And so here's typically the ages. When you're 35 years and younger, you're primarily a player in life. You're on the front lines producing. You're 90% of your life is about producing, whether it's children or bicycles at work or whatever it is you do, right? Like you're a producer. Then you have to decide my ability to produce is lessened. Whatever the field is, it has to start lessening, and my ability to help others produce well has to elevate. And you can at 45 say, I'm going to just produce better. You've peaked about 38, 39, depending on your field. Unless you're a history teacher, you know, there's a few fields.
Stand-up comedian.
Right. Yeah, right. So every sort of area has a different curve, but generally at about 38, you should recognize that you've peaked. And now you have to help others peak, and you get on a different curve and you start coaching more and playing less. And if you do that well, that transition. So you're 40, now's the time to start making that transition. And you take satisfaction now. I had some successes. I had some failures. Now I'm going to use those to help other people produce. And that's the way of Jesus. And it is awesome. It's why at 50, I'm having the best time of my life, because it's not about my production anymore. It's about your production and those who follow. So it, there's a lot with that, but.
So, the Sage Reverie podcast title works well with your illustration. Right. I like that. So Jesus in his primary ministry, when we read the gospels, what is that coach? Is that sage? Like, First of all, I'm wondering, what is a player coach?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you, is that somebody who's doing both or?
Yeah. It's when it's probably about age 40. It's when you're in a hybridized stage in life, 35 to 45 would be the typical age. Again, it varies from industry to industry, but, and family stages, did you have kids late or early, you know, all that, but it's when you're doing some of both. Like it's when you're still playing the sport, but you're also doing a lot of coaching while you're playing. It's that kind of, we talk about an old quarterback is a coach on the field, right? He's still throwing passes, but he's doing a lot of instructing. He's doing a lot of that. And there's just this value to that. And then
funny you would bring up quarterbacks.
Funny I would. Yeah, you're wearing the hat today.
Let's go Chiefs. Yeah, that was
it. Sure. What's this, two in a row now for you?
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say
that. You were going to say that?
I won't bring it up. I'll let you bring it up.
Yeah, two in a row.
Patrick Mahomes, player coach. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, that's where you go.
Yeah, so you know, he's starting to be a little coach, right? But mostly still player. What's he, 29?
Yeah.
So when he's 33, it's like Brady's last 3 years. You saw him like regularly yelling at his offensive line on the sidelines, right? Like more and more of that, more motivator than, you know, LeBron James has a lot more coaching than playing now on the court, right? Like, so it's that's what I mean by player coach, right?
Okay. So the sage, there's like no playing going on.
Very little playing.
So the sage role is much more about teaching, lessons learned, wisdom.
Yeah. And we all want that. We all want to be the grandparent or the great grandparent that gets asked advice.
Yeah.
We all want to be the person in our industry that gets asked advice. That's the goal for
how you got to develop some wisdom in order to get there.
Yeah. Oh, wow. There's so much to that. You have to have become the kind of a person who primarily listens, but when you do speak, you have accumulated wisdom that's not just outdated. It's the application of what's going on in the current world to the experiences and wisdom that you have. And that is a hard place to get to, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, it seems like the person who has become a sage has developed the ability to at my stage in life, I'm still trying to have self-control. I'm still trying to tell my flesh no. I'm still trying to, and I'm not, I doubt that ever fully goes away, but they've probably matured to a place where that is not consuming as much of their energy.
Yeah. And they've matured to a place where they don't just give unsolicited advice telling you how to get to that place. That's a hard thing. Yeah. So people have gotten there, but it's so hard. Trust me, as you age, to not look and say, why are you doing that? Yeah. Right. And to be the kind of person that people come to and ask, I see that you're doing this in your life and you've done that. Why? How? And then you answer, you know, that's a hard thing to get to. We all know older people who do know some stuff, but they want to beat you with it.
Yeah.
And so you don't want to talk to them much.
Yeah. About, they're right? more angry about their knowledge than they are generous with their knowledge.
Yep.
This I could see playing a big role in the way we use our finances. Earlier in life, we're trying to figure out how can I buy all the stuff I want to and accumulate all the stuff I want to. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing with wisdom and that age, you've accumulated some stuff. But in order to do what you're saying in terms of pouring into others and changing the attention from yourself to others, that probably requires you to be less self-focused in areas like your finances. Mm-hmm.
So you have to have thought about that when you're a player.
Yeah.
So you don't spend all you're making when you're a player, right? So that when you get to that coach and then sage, you have both time margin and financial margin, and then you can be generous at that stage as well. So it requires that. It also requires the pursuit of things and experience are typically associated with player stage. We're using our time and our money to pursue experience and things primarily for either us or our kids, right?
Yep.
You have to transition from that. So the pursuit of other people experiencing experiences and things are your goal, not you don't need those as much anymore to experience another level of joy. Mm. And as you mature through that, then you have the resources. So if I still have to be paid at a high level when I'm 62, I can't transition to sage.
Yep.
I can't transition to sage.
You didn't invest well and save well. Yeah.
Yeah. And if I still require certain expenditures.
Yeah.
There's a combination of that as well. Like if I still require the best boat.
Yeah.
That's going to be a problem for me becoming a sage.
Yeah. I feel like in my life and in the life of a lot of my friends, when we were younger, we spent a lot of our money on stuff.
Yeah.
We wanted things. Then we aged a little bit and we more wanted to spend our money on experiences and all the things that we didn't have time to do because we were trying to make enough money to buy the stuff we wanted. Now we're trying to, we spend our money on experiences more. I don't know if that's common or not, but you're saying then there's actually a third stage where you're not spending it on yourself at all. You're spending on others if you've reached the level of sage. Yeah.
You get joy when you provide an experience of growth for somebody else and you help fund that experience of growth. You have to be able to do that if you want to get to that sage stage in your life.
I want to play a video that I think might help us here.
The more you think about yourself, the more unhappy you are. And it's actually, it's such a striking phenomenon that if you look at this statistically, there's almost no difference between self-conscious thoughts, so thoughts that involve I, let's say, and suffering from the ravages of negative emotion like emotion and depression. And so this obsessive self-centeredness, narrow self-centeredness, just makes all of that suffering much, much worse. So clearly, that's clearly the case. And a victim is someone to whom things constantly happen involuntarily. And if you construe yourself as a victim rather than as an actor, let's say, then as an actor of your own destiny, then you put yourself in a situation where you're constantly under what your body responds to as stress. So that's clearly no good.
Yeah. You know, what he brings out there is this, as you transition from player clear to sage, everything is way less about you and you have to let go of yourself. And you know how you see that play out is with the words that you use. So an average person is going to say maybe 8,000 words in a day. As a player, you're actively leading, producing. You're the parent. You can't get by with like 3,000 words, right? But as you transition, you have to use less words. The person you're speaking with needs to speak 60% of the time, and you have to speak 30-40% of the time. And that's one of the hardest things because when it's about you, I really am willing to be quiet and listen. But if it's still about me, I want to respond more quickly and I want to say more and I want to tell longer stories. It's about me, just like I'm doing right now. I'm dominating this little moment, right?
Yeah.
That's not how a sage operates, right? Or a coach.
I feel like that's helpful to me in knowing, okay, what's next? What do I need to be pointing toward? Because in my current stage of fighting off a midlife crisis, so much of it is me. It is, I prayed for X and I did not get right now. My son, Lincoln, is, he's very thoughtful in our conversations about God. When Jesus talks about the faith of a child, I don't think my son got that. Like he is skeptical. He asks questions. He pushes back. Like that's just the way that's the way he's wired. And so when we talk about prayer, he wants to be able to point toward the answer to every prayer, to every request he brings. Yep. And he gets so frustrated so quickly if God does not give him what he asked for.
Yeah.
Part of that was, I feel like God did give him a lot, like really silly things when he was really young. He used to play Minecraft.
Okay.
And he would say, God, help me find a blue sheep.
Yeah.
And then he'd find a blue sheep. And so he created this unrealistic idea of God as a genie in a bottle.
Yeah.
And God didn't give him everything he wanted. So now he's very discontent about prayer.
Yeah.
And I can sense some of that rising up within me in in my frustration about what I've not achieved, what has not worked. Mm. And I think that can pretty easily turn into frustration with God. Mm-hmm. And I'm mad at God because I feel like I'm following you. I feel like I'm doing what you've asked me to do. It's kind of what the guy in the first video was talking about. It's like, I've done all the right stuff. I've checked all the right. Now, obviously, when I start saying that, it sounds so me-centered, so selfish, so arrogant. What you're saying is the way to fight off this midlife crisis is to put the me aside, put the I aside, because not everybody becomes a sage. It's not just a given. You're going to become a sage. Got to meet these milestones. Well,
there's a moment we all have to have when we recognize we're not all that. It's, you know, you have to decide, are you going to keep trying to be special, or are you just going to experience joy as a child of God? And you have to choose between those two. And if your goal in life is to be special, you know, there's a book, From Strength to Strength, that was written a couple of years ago, and it brilliantly statistically points this out. So many of those going through midlife challenge, they hold on to this, I'm going to be a great player. I'm going to be special. And to do that, I can't experience happiness like others do. But the ones who transition as God created them, they decide, you know what? If I'm special, it's because God chose to bless me in some way. But I'm just going to take joy in being a child of God. And boy, if you can figure that out in your 40s, your 60s are going to be awesome. So,
can you talk a little bit about regret? I feel like obviously we all have the big regret we didn't buy Apple. Apple stock 20 years ago. But I'm talking more kind of I am naturally one who looks at my past and all I can see are the things that I screwed up, the opportunities I missed. I spend so much of my life trying to make sure I'm not missing any opportunities, the FOMO, the all that. And so as a result of fearing missing opportunities, I have a lot of regrets.
Chasing them and you're regretting.
Have you had to deal much with regret, and how does that ever go away, or is that just kind of something you'll carry forever?
Oh, absolutely, it goes away. It again, it's part of this mindset of the clock is ticking, and I was supposed to experience this level of joy and accomplish this level, and the clock is ticking, and now I turn 40, and that's probably like halfway through my life. And if I got like halfway through the experiences I was supposed to, you reach a point where you get rid of the clock, and you, it's not about your experiences and your stuff. There's a letting go. You'll be able to let go. But it all comes back to that. You know what? I'm really just a child of God, and I'm created to experience what He created me to experience, and that's going to be up to Him. And there's a letting go. There's a letting go, and when you let go, your regrets kind of go as well, because you give up on, I will have lived the wisest life of my time. I will have figured out marriage and parenting. I will have, you're a leader, you're a pastor, right? I will have figured it out and got it right. And I will be able to look back and say, boy, you give up. No, you're going to look back and say, I messed up most of it.
I can see this playing out in the way the church does pastors. There are so many... The rise of celebrity pastors, and that now pastors much later in life than they used to are still the players. They're still the focus. They're still, and obviously there's a sage role to play within pastoring, but I can definitely see how that has been delayed too long for so many of these celebrity pastors that there's no plan for when they retire. As soon as they retire, that church is dying because the personality of the church was the personality of the pastor.
And it's not even just that. Like, that is absolutely true. It's also one of the reasons their ministry, all of our ministries, aren't multiplying instead of just adding, is because there is this holding on to being the player. right? And there's this multiplication effect that happens when in my late 30s, I start to look around and say, it's time to transition to being a coach.
Yep.
And when that truly happens, there's this mustard seed thing that just, right?
Yep.
And it can happen in your family. We hold on to authority too long with our kids. There's so many ways in which this can play out. And you're exactly right. If I keep wanting to be the player past the point I'm supposed to be a player,
yeah,
it's not going to end well.
I could see the most of the churches that I pastored in before this one were churches of 200 people,
yeah,
much smaller churches. And when you're in a church that size, then the pastor is having a connection with each person, yes, in the ministry.
Yeah.
And they are playing the game with each, mm-hmm, of them. Mm-hmm. And so you're doing the player coach thing, mm-hmm, but a transition that had to happen when now I'm pastoring a church that's larger,
yeah,
is that I can't,
right,
do all of that. And I've got, right, to play more of a coaching role, mm-hmm, in my staff and in the leaders of our church,
yeah,
so that they can do more hands-on ministry,
yeah,
with, because we have a larger number of people.
You're a leader of leaders,
yeah,
not just a leader of followers. And so you've got to figure out how to lead followers from like three levels away.
Yeah.
And in the process of that, create leaders that are better than you, who are leaders of leaders, right? That's a complex kind of deal. And it involves so much more intentionality about serving them in a way that builds them up,
yeah,
rather than you. Now, as you know, I do that for a living, right? I lead leaders who lead leaders, and it can't be about me more and more and more. But that's such an ego deal, right? Like, can you let go of being the one that gets the glory? That's hard. Mm. That's hard.
We talked about fitness earlier, health. Now that your body has stopped working, as you, sure, were describing earlier,
sure,
I've noticed a trend in a lot of people my age have really started to invest in their physical fitness, mm-hmm, at a level they never did before. And you said we're in better shape when we're 40 than 30. Very true of me and my friends. Mm-hmm. And part of it's because we realized I can't keep living like this. My body's going to stop.
Yeah.
And when we were 30, we were eating whatever we wanted and waking up late or whatever. And then in your 40s, you finally start to figure out, okay, I'm going to have to.
Yeah. You have to get good sleep. You have to better. Eat,
is
right?
Is that true, yeah, just with my friends and I, yeah, or do most people? No,
and especially too in our culture today, right? The North, yeah, American culture. We have discovered that we can actually delay aging a bit, mm, by eating right and being fit. And so we are doing that, but it's a really good thing. But it has a dark side. If
really?
it has a dark side. So again, lots of positives. You should be fit, and frankly, you can't become a coach or a sage as easily if you are really unfit and have poor disciplinary practices in, yeah, your life, right? So it's important, and you have to have credibility, respect, and just health. But the challenge is, since we have discovered we kind of can delay it, it delays the facing of reality for us to transition well in life. Mm. So you have way more people trying to hold on to being a player, mm, in whatever way they would be a player. I mean, the stereotypical is you've got the 55-year-old out on the basketball court with the 20-year-old,
yeah,
and he's just as intense and focused just as much on playing as they are, right?
He's got a point to prove.
Right, yeah. He's got this point to prove, and he's the one that gets the technical fouls first. And that's the stereotypical, right, person who's hung on to being a player too long. But you see it in all avenues. I see it in leadership. I see it in pastors. I see it in married people. Okay. So what fitness has done, though, is it has delayed that reality, and it has led to a whole bunch of people in their early 60s experiencing enormous depression. Hmm. Because you can't, Charles Barkley's famous for saying, you can't defeat Father Time. It's coming.
Yeah.
And you can be enormously fit. You can be one of those who makes it into their 80s still doing whatever it is that, you know, you do or whatever. But it's coming. And having gotten so focused on fitness, it can delay, it can skew your reality, and you don't transition emotionally.
Yeah.
In time, and it can be deadly.
People spend their whole lives saving money so that they can spend it all in the last couple of years of their lives to try to prolong it by a couple months.
Yeah.
The amount of money that that our country, our world spends to prolong life by a couple more years is a tremendous amount of money. Now, I'm a big fan of prolonged life. I'm a fan of you trying to be healthy and, and live a longer life, but yeah, sometimes we need to be wise and say, okay, is this the best use of our resources?
So a lot of money prolonging actual life, but also a lot of money prolonging like physical beauty, sexual prowess, right? Like athletic ability, all that stuff. Like we spend a lot of money prolong, and we want that to last as long as possible, right? Like I want to be able to make love to my wife as long as physically possible, right? I want to prolong these kind of things.
Yep.
I want to be able to elk hunt with my sons and my grandsons and maybe my great grandchildren. And I want these things. But it can become the pursuit of something that just delays reality.
And we all end up with plastic faces and giant lips.
Yep.
And the Botox trends are all over TV. I'm just like, all right, they're trying a little too hard. Like, let the wrinkles come because that looks terrible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And no money to give to other people because it got so much, so expensive to prolong it, right?
Yeah. And it helps us to remind ourselves that we are eternal. This is not the end for us.
Yeah.
Our end is not when these bodies die. Yeah. And so I can justify not investing too much in this body because I recognize that my home is heaven and it's not here.
And we in the church have to be careful because we can become so focused on living what we say righteously, which sometimes becomes this external, what you eat and drink. Like the way our attitude towards people who smoke is a little over the top.
Yep, it is.
Yeah, smoking is not a great habit.
Yeah.
But probably no more deadly than the pizza I had last night. It's a little more deadly, but you see my point, like we can get a little too focused.
Yeah.
On that compared to the gossip that I participated in as I ate my vegetarian meal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And God, I think God would say, maybe you could live 1 year less long and live a little better. Right. So we in the church have been a problem with this.
We have ashtrays out in front of the church. And we have protesters here very regularly now.
Okay.
There's a group of people in Gillette who started protesting our church and saying our church is full of a bunch of sinners and we're not calling people to repentance. And one of the things that they regularly point to is that we have ashtrays out in front of our church and we are justifying their sin, those who smoke, because we have created a hierarchy of sins and become holier than thou because we don't smoke.
Yeah.
We've picked other sins.
Yeah. And then if you go in their church, there's a whole like counter full of donuts.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So we can be so hypocritical. I mean, as can the whole world. So hypocrites. But you're exactly right. We've maybe gotten a little carried away on some of the things that we point to with righteous living.
Well, that's really helpful. And wherever you're watching from, whatever stage of life you're watching from, I think it's valuable to take an inventory every once in a while of your life and where you are. And is it time to consider yourself moving on to a next season and becoming a new person, redefining your calling in life? I'm in a season like that, and I'm sure many of you are, whether it's the same season I'm in or a different one. But I think it's a good inventory to take of ourselves periodically. So I invite you to do that. Thanks for joining us today. As you go, know that Jesus loves you unconditionally and he died to give you new life.